Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another week here at the Damage Report. The news waits for no man. And despite the fact that I and probably many of you wish that the weekend had just lasted a little bit longer, we're jumping into it. A lot's happening. And we're very, very excited, very lucky to have joining us for another week of the news, Francesca Fiorentini. How's it going, Francesca?
Hi, John. It's here we are again. Do I sing that song? I don't know if I sing it right. I don't even know what song that is. But yay. Welcome to the Dragon Den. And it's like the Thunderdome, except sad.
Two dragons enter, one dragon. So tell me, before we jump into it, how have you been? How has the Bituation Room been? How was your episode yesterday?
Oh, it was so good. We had Kim Kelly, who writes for Teen Vogue and a bunch of other places, talk about the unionization effort going on in Alabama at an Amazon warehouse. And so it was really dope. Apparently the workers they're feeling good. They've got a majority of workers who are gonna vote to unionize. So I just can't wait to see Bezos, you know, flip the toupee that he doesn't wear and freak out. You know, and so it was great. It was excellent. Mike Drucker, who is such a crusher on Twitter, and he's a comedian, so funny. So we talked about all the things that happened last week, but mostly Ted Cruz, of course.
Okay, so immediately, that's awesome. By the way, have you heard about the resignation bonuses they're doing to try to clear people out?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, it's straight. Apparently they do that often. It probably so I don't know if it's unique, but it might be unique to this warehouse. Okay. But it makes sense, you know, they hire up during the holidays and then are like, "Sorry, we don't want to keep you all." Yeah. Not that we can't, but we don't want to. So here you go. And it's like $1,000. Like, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Well, excited to have you here. We got a lot we're gonna talk about. The audience is happy at least 50% of the way. Lunar Dragon says John in a dirty t-shirt and Franny looking fire. Lol, seems about right. It's not a, this is a perfectly clean gray t-shirt. It's our great indoors t-shirt. This is why I only wear black. See, now I'm never gonna wear another color for like 5 years. Thank you, Lunar Dragon. Anyway, but thank you everyone for being here. Thank you.
You're just the perfect 6.5, 7 tops.
I'll take it. Anyway, well, with that, let's talk about what's coming up on the news today. So we're gonna be talking about the pandemic, very serious stuff. Thanks, Francesca. What's coming up for CPAC, which is still gonna happen? What's coming up other than a bunch of them getting COVID? Other than that, we're gonna give you updates. Ted Cruz still alive, seems like a bad choice, but he's sticking with it. So we're gonna be talking about him. And the White House dog, is it a good boy, a bad boy, or an ugly boy? We're gonna find out a little bit later on. So if you're watching, please hit the like button and share the stream so more people know we're active. Oh, early heads up, it is a Monday. Tinkerbell Pixie says John just needs lipstick. I'm gonna leave for a minute and come back with it, and you're gonna regret having said that. But anyway, on Mondays we do our top 10 list. This Monday, I'm going to be rolling solo doing a requested top 10 list. My ranking of the top 10, which is basically like all of them, Star Wars movies. Very controversial. A lot of people love to hate my positions on the movies. So
what? I don't get to push back on that.
Do you have strong feelings about that?
I could.
You could.
I mean, definitely.
If you want to do it, you can do it.
How about I have feelings.
You let it simmer.
If you put the first three anywhere near your top three, I'm never talking to you again.
Okay, I just assumed you wouldn't have strong opinions about this. So here's what we're gonna do. I don't want to put you on the spot. So
okay.
You let it simmer.
I will.
After the show, we'll briefly talk about whether you're gonna join me or not.
All right.
Okay. So but anyway. Yeah, anyway, that's happening one way or the other with Francesca, without Francesca. But the only way you're gonna find out is become a tier two or tier three member on YouTube, and then you'll have access to it. And with that, it's either actually getting hot in here, or it's just everything that's been going on in the conversation, but it feels warm. Anyway, Francesca, why don't we talk about some news?
Sure.
We're gonna transition from all of that into an incredibly serious and dark story. Okay. America has now reached a grim milestone that early on in the pandemic had been thrown around as a, well, it could never get that bad, right? Sort of thing. Well, we've passed, in the official count, 500,000 coronavirus deaths, or will by the time you're watching this video, 500,000. And that is, of course, the official number. God only knows, and we'll be the only one who will ever know, because we'll never know how many people have actually died and weren't registered, especially early on, as deaths from coronavirus. But President Biden is going to be holding a moment of silence this evening for the Americans who have died of coronavirus. 500,000. He had, before his inauguration day, he held a lighting ceremony at the Lincoln Memorial to honor those who had died at that point. Biden has committed to vaccinating at least 100 million people in his first 100 days in office. And they're now saying that they expect that they will beat that by a good bit, which is great for the future. But nothing we do now is going to bring back that 500,000 rapidly approaching this American Civil War death toll. And we're going to give you updates on some of the numbers, but we talked about this so much that I just thought it was important that we take a moment to recognize that despite all of the national attention on this, the constant pointing out of all the mistakes that were being made, all of it designed to limit how many would die, it all failed. Except against some sort of hypothetical where 2 million people died, I guess. But we failed. As a nation, we failed. As a society, we failed. As a media looking to hold politicians accountable and influence their behavior, we failed. And 500,000 Americans died as a result of all of that failure from top to bottom.
Yeah. I mean, the one difference I will say, and I'm going to be honest with you, like, I do feel like the major difference, because I haven't seen that much concrete difference between Trump and Biden, but the one small difference is acknowledging that 500,000 people have died, acknowledging that these are real lives and real people, that these are real losses. And I have to say that that lighting ceremony, as someone who's lost family to coronavirus, was very touching and like meant something to me. And I think we should be marking these milestones. It is important. And I know that folks are saying, okay, well, there's the vaccine rollout and he's trying. I understand that he's inherited a really desperate situation. I'm of the mind that we, even with the vaccine, are not doing all that we can to stop the spread of coronavirus from a federal level. I think that we are, you know, we're looking at Texas and sort of like pointing at how deregulated and unprepared they are for natural disasters. The United States is the Texas of the world, okay? Mm-hmm. Y'all have to understand that that's how we look and that's how we behave, which is each person for themselves. It is a highly and bizarrely individualistic culture. There is no infrastructural for health or for communities, right? Like, this is a dog eat dog country. It is a sink or swim. The market comes first and your lives come second. And we have shown that over every single month of this pandemic, including this month of Biden, right? I mean, I think some basic steps like travel restrictions, real restrictions, not just suggestions, real restrictions so that we don't keep these new variants from spreading all over the country. Those have not been implemented, right? Mm-hmm. Because of course, airlines come first and money making comes first and people's ability to go to Cancun comes first. So it's a reckoning, you guys. If Texas is a reckoning, if what's happening in Texas is a reckoning for that state, what's happened with us in this country with COVID is a reckoning for how we approach things like disasters, plagues, and just general levels of caring.
Yeah. Yeah. And like with Texas, you know, they're now saying that they will, you know, do something about it. And we're going to be talking about Texas later on, but it remains to be seen. And I don't know if it's sort of a core part of progressivism or if it's something that's just sort of tangentially related, but like I want to live in a world where we care to know what is true, that we will pay attention to keep tabs on what is true. And based on what happens, what actually happens, there will be effects, there will be consequences. And like Texas is obviously a big failure. Coronavirus is a failure, you know, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 100,000 times bigger.
Yeah.
And what consequences were there after all that? Like, remember, how many times during the first couple of months was there these constant conversations about how bad is it gonna be? Well, they say maybe it'll be 80,000, but now they're saying, well, it's just gonna be 80,000. It's not gonna be 200,000. So Trump is doing a good job because you guys said it might be this, but now it's just gonna be this. It would never be that. Oh, wait, now it's that, but it could have hypothetically been higher. And like nobody early on, no matter what they might say now, and they won't say anything because they don't have to, they can just not talk about it. Like Biden is acknowledging this. Fox News isn't gonna give a damn about this. Nobody was like, Tucker Carlson wasn't like on day one, well, if Trump keeps it to 500,000, I guess he did a good job. Nobody said that. The goalposts have continually been shifted, yep, bowled over by an ever expanding mountain of corpses. And yet he's never apologized. Fox News has never apologized for spreading misinformation or actively encouraging people to take up as their political identity, not caring about this crisis. Trump lost re-election. Maybe because of that, that's true. That's a consequence. And they lost control of the Senate. Maybe that's a consequence too. But those are the two. That's like it. Maybe Perdue and Loeffler, because of their profiteering during it, maybe that contributed to their loss. But what else, like to the scale of the disaster, the tragedy, the failure, not losing, not getting reelected and maybe coming back in 4 years and winning then, that's the best we can do as a society?
No. And I think you're absolutely right. There has to be accountability, especially if we're talking about accountability for January 6th, which we should, a 9/11 commission style commission for what happened on that day. And I know there's new information even coming out today about like the Secret Service potentially being involved. Then let's do that with COVID. We absolutely need to do that with COVID. Who got the government contracts, right? Where were those that random dude who was supposed to fly a bunch of N95 masks in from China or wherever? Like there were schemes upon grifts, and there needs to be accountability. Not to mention people who got the PPP loans who did not need them, who did not save jobs, like Jared Kushner. Let's say it again, right? Like, so there has to be an accounting. You're absolutely right. I mean, it is like, you know, we need recovery time from this presidency just to take stock. Like, I know we have to get going, do stuff, but you're right. I don't want in 4 years for these same goons to come back and pretend like nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we need like a truth and reconciliation thing for this, that entire year.
Yeah.
And we need to decide as a country, are we going to have any line that once you pass it with your either failure or your willfully not caring, where it becomes a crime? Can you fail so that 100,000 people died who didn't need to, 200,000 people died that didn't need to? Like, or is that just going to be acceptable? Because we talk as like lefties about like, hey, like if the president orders a drone strike against an American citizen, shouldn't that be a crime? But like, do you know how hard it's gonna be to get like that to have consequences if you can kill 100,000 Americans without consequences? Anyway, I know that to some extent we're relitigating stuff that we've been talking about for a solid year now, but especially with hitting 500,000, and you know, God only knows by the time we're out of this, is it 600? Is it 700? Is it 800,000? We've hit 500. Are you confident that we won't double that? I feel pretty good, but we will see.
I just wanted to say, you're absolutely right. I think that every single life, that we could do so much more. I'm glad the vaccine is rolling out. We can still do more. And I don't think 200,000 more lives is worth it at all. Mm-hmm. It's not worth my so-called freedom to be able to fly all over the world or whatever. Like, you know, we're still inside. You know what I mean? Vaccinate teachers, just do or not. I don't know. Like there's a Rubicon that Americans won't cross over, which is the market gods must win. People have to go to work and essential workers will die, including maybe teachers and kids.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Here are some of the most recent numbers. As of yesterday, COVID tracking project, which unfortunately is not going to be functioning for about another, another month, they're going to keep going and then they're going to stop. They say that the federal information is now accurate enough. I guess, I think we're still giving the Biden administration credit that they haven't yet actually earned, but we'll see. They say that there were 56,000 COVID hospitalizations, 58,000 cases, and a little bit less than 1,300 deaths. Now that is over the weekend, so we'll have to see, you know, by Wednesday when it tends to peak, what that will look like. But 58,000 cases is a significant drop. In fact, it makes the 7-day average of cases the lowest it's been since October 23rd. So that is, you know, back before both Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all these things that we said, please everyone, please don't do what you're gonna do. It's gonna result in a lot of people dying. You were here. We did that, and a lot of people still did all of their partying stuff and their traveling stuff. And you can see from the cases how they went up, and the deaths went above 3,000 or 4,000 a day. Again, everything that we said came true, and it doesn't matter that everybody. And when I say I mean literally every responsible person in media and science. And so things look like they're getting better. Now that is unfortunately usually when things start to get bad, when people are like, oh, it's good again. That's unfortunately the way it works. But maybe with the combination of increasing vaccinations, and in fact, you can see where we rate. If you're looking for the US, it's down there near the bottom. In fact, if we go to the second one, you'll see a better view of where we rate. It's not great, but it's going up. And hey, a lot of people have had it and might be resistant now. So hey, Francesca, maybe we're moving towards normalcy.
Yeah, cool. We still don't know what we need to know about this virus. My God, you could maybe get it again. But yes, it's a good sign. I'm at least glad that in the places the vaccine is being rolled out responsibly, that it is targeting people who, if they got sick, would be more likely to die. And so I think that's good. I'm glad that people with disabilities are now getting access to the vaccine. That needs to happen. People with comorbidities, that really needs to happen as soon as possible. And for everyone else to just be really thoughtful. And I mean, look, we're being forced into this Republican mentality, which is always, it doesn't matter until it happens to me. I don't care until it happens to me. And I urge everyone to try and resist that push to feel that way, because we're so sick and tired of, you know, not being able to do the things that we're enjoying. And sadly, we don't have the leadership we need, which is why even though restaurants are open, I'm a pass. You know what I mean? I'm a pass for now.
Yeah, I saw the Denny's that had like a big outdoor.
It won't be Denny's. Are you kidding me? I'm not gonna die for Denny's.
And I like Denny's. I will pick up the food from Denny's. I don't need to sit at a Denny's.
I'll make you a breakfast that'll be better than Denny's, John.
I like Denny's. I'm just saying, like, that's why you're gonna die. No. I wanna die because I decided at long last that, yeah, it's probably safe for me to get a motorcycle again. That's how I wanna die. I don't wanna die as a result of Denny's. Or I will die as a result of Denny's, but not from going to Denny's once. I wanna die the way an American dies, from going to Denny's for my entire life. And then this happens and you die from Denny's. This episode not brought to you by Denny's. But anyway, It's good food.
You look great, John. Yeah.
Thanks. This is, I'm not, no, that's not what I'm doing, but thank you. Aside from his resignation from a Hollywood union and him calling in to Fox to ostensibly talk about Rush Limbaugh having died, but just complain about the fact that he lost re-election, Trump has kept a very low profile since he was booted out of the White House. That ends this coming Sunday at CPAC, when Donald Trump will apparently tell the assembled Republicans that he is the Republicans' presumptive 2024 nominee for president. Anonymous sources told Axios that his plan is to assume the mantle of challenger to Joe Biden or to another Democrat should the 78-year-old president decide not to run for a second term. Understand, of course, that by that point, Trump will be just about that same age. Yeah. And an unnamed longtime advisor was quoted as saying Trump's speech to the right-wing event will be a show of force with the message, I may not have Twitter or the Oval Office, but I'm still in charge. Francesca, what do you think?
No, thank you.
No, you know.
No, thanks.
Do not want.
No. Oh my God. Oh, the most block emojis. You know, I'm not scared or mad at Donald Trump. I'm scared of the media. I really am. Because in 3 years, when he starts campaigning in earnest and all the media's like lost their revenue sources because Trump's no longer in office and things are sort of less on fire, they're all gonna be like, what if we like did that thing where we gave him a bunch of free coverage? And then they're gonna cover empty podiums again and they're gonna reinflate him again. And I just like, I don't care if he's on the ballot. I just don't wanna see him and Biden in another debate.
Oh my God.
Just like, you know, it's like Fast and Furious. It's like too senile, you know, too mumbly. Like it's I don't know. Like it's gonna be, you know, the sequel. I'll workshop that. But you know, the sequel of them just like bickering like old men in a nursing home. I'm like, oh God, just put on MASH and shut up.
that would be better. I would go for that. Yeah. The only disagreement I have with what you just said is when you said in 3 years when he starts campaigning. I mean, I think that's what this is. I think he took 3 weeks off, Francesca. But anyway, look, it has very little direct effect on us anytime soon, but it will have an effect on the Republican Party. Him doing this between now and the next 2 years, that either could or should cause many other potential Republican nominees to decide it's not worth their time or effort or fundraising, which they probably won't be able to do because all the money will go to Trump anyway. So it is definitely going to have an effect on politics. It also could potentially influence the way Republicans interact with Joe Biden and the Democratic majority. So Trump has far less direct ability to hurt the American people in a variety of ways than he did back when he was president. But he's still going to try to hurt people. The only hope we have is that, and this is another one of the things that those anonymous advisors of his are starting to say, that he is going to be raising a ton of money to run primary challenges against the people who have angered him. And the vast majority of those are going to be Republicans. So good. That actually is kind of awesome and I'm here for it. But anyway, it's about to come soon. Now, I don't know if his speech at CPAC will be the beginning of him regularly engaging with the Republican Party in politics rather than from behind the scenes, but it might be. He's gonna have an audience. They're gonna cheer him a bunch. He's gonna have missed that. It'll be interesting to see if he's willing to go back to just playing golf after getting that high once again.
John, what do you think? Do you think he's gonna be like new and improved and have a bunch of new talking points and, you know, really like revamp his image and, you know, maybe admit that the coronavirus was really serious? Or is it just gonna be, I won, you know, he never liked me. Remember Reince? I don't know. Why am I saying Reince? I think Reince. Here's my theory about.
I think that's what's gonna happen. Yes, I think it's gonna be the Rush Limbaugh call into Fox for he's gonna
one
talk
guy.
For 145 minutes in a row. That's my guess. We'll have to see. Now, Other than Donald Trump declaring total dominance over the Republican Party and challenging anyone to challenge him, what else will be going on at CPAC? Well, here is what conservative activists and those who are involved enough in this whole thing that they'd go to CPAC during a pandemic again. Remember last year's CPAC when some people got COVID? Now a lot of people are gonna get COVID, but that's not gonna stop them. Here is some of what's going on. And we know this from some of the panels they're gonna be having. So let's see, you can go to the panel with Jason Chaffetz on it, saying it's the Protecting Elections Part 3 panel. The left pulled the strings, covered it up, and even admits it. I don't know what that's a reference to. Francesca, did you admit it? Did you admit that you stole the election?
Mm-hmm. I actually, and this is not even a joke, I put it on my Christmas card.
Stupid, don't do that.
I put it on my, I know, so you can just see it, but I admitted it on my Christmas card to people and sent it out to family and friends. Like, you know, I also stuffed ballots for Joe Biden, so you're welcome. Yep. Merry Christmas.
I did some ballot harvests. It was my backyard garden. I grew a crop of ballots through Pennsylvania that way.
Yeah, there's a YouTube video on how to harvest your own ballots. It's great.
Yeah. Anyway, so really fast, that panel is very emblematic of what this entire thing is gonna be like, because there's also Protecting Elections Part 4, failed states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, oh my. Number 5, they told you, by the way, we're skipping 1 and 2. Number 5, they told you so, the signs were always there. Let's see,
oh
we've got
God.
Other culprits, why judges and media refuse to look at the evidence. So, and that's got a current representative, Mo Brooks, who says this election was obviously stolen. The evidence is 100% clear. Why isn't anyone listening to it? Including the dozens of judges they tried to get to. So there is a good chunk of the entire CPAC is gonna be about this election was obviously stolen. Here is what we should do as a result of it. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, Mo Brooks, who also spoke at the Stop the Steal rally and helped plan it and definitely should resign or be ousted from Congress. But no, he will not be, I guess, at this point. We're gonna have a lot to talk about next Monday, John. I am very excited to see this nut job con. Like, what is it called? Is it like, what should we rename CPAC?
Well, people are saying, considering all of this, it's a little bit less CPAC and a little bit more QPAC, but we're gonna have to CPAC. Now, last CPAC was when Borat showed up in a full Donald Trump costume. So we'll have to see if he appears again. But anyway, they are very much doubling down on the election was stolen. And that is annoying. But what really matters is that they are 100% comfortable saying that an election that, you know, in terms of the total number of votes wasn't even that particularly close and was analyzed and audited and all that over and over, which just says to me, there's no election that they won't claim is rigged, and they know that their audience is here for it, that they love that sort of stuff. So, I mean, this is their party now. So get ready for that. Let's go to this recent appearance of Steve Scalise on the news and what he's not willing to admit to.
But clear this up for me. Joe Biden won the election. He is the legitimate president of the United States. The election was not stolen, correct?
Look, Joe Biden's the president. There were a few states that did not follow their state laws. That's really the dispute that you've seen continue on. And look, if you're Joe Biden, you probably want to keep talking about impeachment and anything other than the fact that he's killed millions of American energy jobs.
But Congressman, I know Joe Biden's the president. He lives at the White House. I asked you, is he the legitimate president of the United States? And do you concede that this election was not stolen? Very simple question, please. Just answer.
Once the electors are counted, yes, he's the legitimate president. But if you're gonna ignore the fact that there were states that did not follow their own state legislatively set laws, that's the issue at heart that millions of people still are not happy with and don't wanna see happen again. You know, look, you can rehash the election from 2020 all day long, but there are people concerned about what the next election's gonna look like. Are we gonna finally get back to the way the rule of law works? And I think that's the biggest frustration many people have is those states that didn't follow the law, are they gonna keep doing that in the future? Are we gonna finally get back to what the Constitution calls out for electing our leaders.
Okay, so it's a little bit less just relitigating that election, although they spent months telling people it was stolen, and now they will say, but people are frustrated because it was stolen. It's an interesting little circle, but it's also, how are we gonna stop these states from continuing to do it in the future? Which means a 50 state or mostly 4-state assault on voting rights that is already underway. We've done multiple stories about the huge number of pieces of legislation that have been filed, especially in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, but also Nevada and Wisconsin as well, to try to stop people from voting. That is the one thing they will respond to this election with. It's not gonna be, you know, changing their platform, actually running on something. It's going to be, we got beat because a few too many people voted, and that's a lot easier to fix than the current state of our party ideologically or in terms of policy.
I just need people to hear the amount of racism that is coded in what he said, right? Like, let's get back to what our constitution laid out, the laws that were violated. Name a law. What was violated? Mail-in voting, legal, right? Early voting, legal. Like, nothing was violated. There is no court case that held water. So what are you talking about? Number one. Number two, when you say constitutional, blah, 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 you basically mean, you know, when the founding fathers and like uppity women couldn't vote and nor could our property, i.e. human beings. Like, this is what you're talking about. You're talking about going back to, not even going back to, tripling down on, quadrupling down on white minority rule. And when you can't win, even with a skewed system that works in your favor always, you lie and you just say, well, then people illegally voted, and people, then there were ballots that were harvested, and the machines flipped the votes. No, they didn't. No, it didn't happen. Sorry, right? And like, again, I think that it really is, you know, the other day I was looking at like voter turnout, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, was something like 67%. Like, that's huge for the 2020 election.
Yeah, that's
unprecedented.
True.
And that's incredible. And usually we barely scrape by to get like 51% of the voting population to actually come out to the polls. And so it is meaningful, and we should be making and gaining on what is it? Staking claims on the gains made. It's I don't know, word salad Monday morning. But the point is, yeah. The point is that what Steve Scalise is saying is that too many people of color voted in this election. We need to get back when it was just white people who voted and everyone else were too disenfranchised and too kept from the polls and too many hurdles and too strapped with like 3 different jobs for them to actually get to vote. Don't get it twisted. And the other thing is, as soon as he said he's not willing to agree that that Biden is the legitimate president, cut the mic, man. That's it. We're done. Oh, cool. Oh, you so not okay, bye. Cause like, we talk about facts and reality on this show, but you're over here. So bye.
Yeah, and like I like that you ask the question, because I think it's a great shortcut. It's not quite as good of a shortcut to getting where these people are at than asking, do you believe that Democrats are sacrificing babies to some goat god and drinking its blood? But the overlap between people who think the election was stolen and think that Hillary Clinton drinks hormones is like a circle. But if they answered incorrectly, then yeah, because if you keep them on at that point, then you are helping to spread the misinformation. And you have to decide, is that what you want your show to be, regardless of whatever your show is?
Quick clarification, Hillary Clinton does drink hormones, as any woman over the age of 55 does also drink hormones.
Yeah,
they
maybe
need
not
it.
The specific ones they talk about in the pizza thing. Ted Cruz was tired of being mocked over his ridiculous lies about his Cancun trip. So he decided he would rather be mocked about his supposed charitable efforts now that he's finally back in Texas. He's being attacked online for posting pictures of himself loading water bottles into a vehicle as he seeks to repair the political damage from jetting off to Cancun for a family vacation. You can see the photos here with the hashtag Texas Strong, and he's got the Texas mask on. Hey everybody, Texas, Texas, and also, might I add, Texas. I'm here. Everyone stop hating me, please. I don't know, Francesca, what do you think? I mean, this, if he had just done this first, sure, that's something. And it's something, I guess. It's just so see-through at this point. So how much credit do we have to give Ted Cruz?
I mean, credit for posting that on Twitter, bro. Like, wow, like that does take cojones, you know? Like to actually like appear like you care after we all know you went to Cancun and left your dog, like hats off. You got getting rate. I think being ratioed is his kink. Like he's really into it. All right. Like he wants to be owned and we know it. And he's clear because here's the thing. No, like his hometown, I think it's the Houston Chronicle, right? His newspaper said he should resign after the insurrection that he helped in terms of like stoking all the lies around when he was voting, trying to stop the confirmation of the electors and the election, right? Like he was, and so his home, no one will cover him in a positive light. Like no, there's no more Texas-based newspapers that will, that like Ted Cruz. His friends don't even like him in the group chat, right? His dog doesn't like him, his kids don't like him. I don't know who likes Ted Cruz at this moment. Nobody likes Ted Cruz. And so, it's funny to see someone who's like, you should look, a news outlet should come and at least snap a photo of that and give you a little column, but they won't. So he's just left to tweet it out himself and be like, Texas strong.
Here's some water. And here's also some barbecue. Serve some delicious Houston barbecue to the firefighters. And then he says he wants to thank our first responders following these unprecedented snowstorms, which is great. First responders, very important in this terrible tragedy that's killed almost 60 people in that state alone. Here's the issue. When you are using the first responder term, I am reminded of, wait, what was your first response? Your first response is to go to Cancun. So maybe don't talk about the first responders. There's a great tweet from Josh Marshall. It said, "Sir, generous of you to help put the water AOC bought into cars." Which is good, because the thing is, like, AOC is doing stuff like that. Notably, she didn't go to some tropical location. She also raised close to $5 million. I think it's at 4.7, I think, is what it's up to. So doing the actual, like, the hand labor is important. Volunteering on the ground is important. Raising money to help so many people, arguably even more important. And again, it's just like when politicians do stuff like this, it's not like if AOC had just gone and volunteered at a shelter, that would be so amazing because of the actual work she's doing. It's important because it shows us what your priorities are, what you think of in these sorts of times. When you do it only because you were attacked, then it's not like it's objectively helping that much. And we know you didn't want to do this. So
yeah,
I guess it's better. We've been saying for a few days he should be helping out. He's sort of doing that. It's better than him still being in Cancun. But we're also still thinking human beings and we're going to criticize him, I think, in a fairly reasonable way.
No, and this is the thing though, is I think that Beto and AOC are doing the right thing, not just morally, but also in terms of optics and politics. Like Texas is a state that could potentially, that is a purple state, could potentially go blue in the future. And this is where Democrats need to do what Republicans do, which is using these moments to their advantage. And yeah, I'm gonna say to their advantage, because it just so happens that the Democrats, people like AOC, their master Machiavellian plan is to give people good union jobs that create green energy so we can stop climate change and extreme weather events like what just happened in Texas. Yeah. So it's on all the levels, it's what you need to do. So anyway, I'm just so glad she's there. And I also think that Biden, when it's safe and the snow, you know, allows the choppers through, Biden should get there. Yeah, Biden should be there too.
Yeah. I wonder how successful and enduring the Green New Deal that hasn't been passed, destroyed Texas stuff will be, because Texas was hurt because of some of the natural implications of or natural outcomes of having this deregulation free market sort of thing. The energy companies didn't prepare, even though they knew what the problem was, because it would cost money. And so people suffered and died. And the right's response is no. It's not the result of things that were actually done. It's the prophecy for things that someday could be done. And so if Texas comes out of this being angry at leftists who didn't have power and didn't get what they wanted done, rather than this is what actually was done, then maybe it won't move in a more blue direction. Maybe this will actually hurt the Democrats, even though the Republicans were the ones actually in power. And I know that's a surprise to some people, like Don Jr., who was talking about Texas's Democratic governor. That isn't the case. He's actually a Republican. They're the ones who had power.
Now, it is about optics, though, and I think you're right. It's like Republicans are so good at spinning stuff that isn't even in their favor. So Democrats, when they have this clear, like, open goal, man, you take that shot.
Two more little updates about Ted Cruz that not great for the image of the Texas senator. One was that now he's back and he's doing his little photo shoots, giving the water and the barbecue or whatever. But there is a little issue with that because he was just in Mexico. He flew internationally. You're supposed to quarantine. It's still a pandemic. Remember? That was one of the reasons it was a bad idea to go in the first place. Not the worst, but it was a bad thing. And now you're back. So you've done two international trips. You're supposed to quarantine at least for a few days. But he's not doing that. And so hopefully none of the first responders or, you know, regular Texans that he's gonna hand bottles of water or throw paper towels to will get coronavirus from him. But that is still a concern. Ideally, he could have shown a little bit more care, but if he had just gone home and quarantined, then he wouldn't be able to do the photo shoot. So he chose to risk infecting other people.
Yeah, he's very close in some of those photos. He's like hand on the back, you know, like, hey, you got that? You know, I don't know who's taking his photo. I'm sure he just strapped a GoPro to his dog at that point, you know, sent
the
it off.
The remains of the dog. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, nobody wants to be that close to Ted Cruz outside of a pandemic. Dude, understand who you are.
Oh, obviously, the one good thing that comes out of the pandemic is that there are some people who always deserve a 6 foot distance from everything and everybody. Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz is one of those people. So, you know, keep it going. But yeah, it's, and this is again the thing, and I won't talk about international travel too much, but all that stuff is like guidelines, what you should do. And we know that people are not following those rules. And then you have leaders like Ted Cruz absolutely not following those rules. I mean, he could be like, hey, you know, it's like, get on top of the message here, buddy, and not by tweeting out Texas Strong and you handing someone a water bottle. Instead, you're like, I'm doing the responsible thing and staying home because I have been on an international flight, two of them. I've been in Mexico. I don't know what I was exposed to, and I want to keep people safe. In the meantime, I'm helping raise blankety blank blank. Or in the meantime, I'm convening some sort of look at ERCOT or like some sort of look at what happened. Of course, he'll probably be on Fox News this week blaming wind power and AOC. Like, mark my words, that will happen.
Exactly. And finally, the last little update, as if we needed another piece of evidence that he had been lying about his cover story. Axios has learned that Cruz invited David Panton, his longtime friend and former roommate at Princeton Harvard Law, to join the family getaway to Cancun. An aide tells Axios the senator extended the invitation only after the Cruz family planned the vacation last Tuesday. Panton accepted and flew to Mexico, which that's really weird. Did Ted Cruz want his old college roommate to hang out with his daughters on their trip to Mexico? Because he wasn't going to be staying. Why was he sending that guy? And of course, no. He was going on a vacation. He was going to stay for an average vacation's length. He brought people you might bring on an elite rich person vacation. That's all it is. What, like, a massive liar he is.
Sorry, I'm just like, imagine y'all, if it wasn't a, if this didn't happen to Texas, if it wasn't a snowstorm without a power, like with a power outage, like, imagine if he wasn't even a senator from Texas. Mm-hmm. Still, the Senate is on a recess in the middle. Like, I don't know how long have they been in session? Not even a month, you know? Like, they're on a recess right now. It's still bad optics to go to Cancun, even without the entire Texas snowstorm and your like abdication of responsibility, because you're a senator and we still have yet to pass COVID relief. You're on a break right now. Just stay home, man. Meet with the constituents. Talk to, like, go to a town hall. I don't know. Like, it's your second home. Go chill at your second home, but don't go to Cancun. And who knows if other senators are also, you know, gallivanting around. We shall see.
Exactly. Well, hopefully the whole Cruz thing will result in, you know, other members of the media who are tracking this stuff, maybe thinking, oh, people are really interested in this. Let's see where. And maybe some of them will be Democrats. Where are they going for their fancy trips?
Absolutely.
I imagine there have been some trips that have been canceled over the last week or so. coming out of the horrible situation in Texas, you have obviously dozens of deaths. You have people still without drinkable water, water that needs to be boiled. What you also have is a lot of economic devastation for many of the people who are lucky enough to survive this terrible incident. Not only from people whose homes have been massively damaged from either flooding or pipes bursting or things like that, but also the fact that because of the unregulated energy market in Texas, you had the wholesale price of electricity spiking by more than 10,000%, which means that if you were lucky enough to have power, you might have a bill ranging from four digits to one person that had a higher than $17,000 bill for just that limited period of time during the storm. And for some people, it might mean that you were lucky to not have had access to power. So there are a lot of politicians, both local and national politicians, that are now calling for some sort of either federal or state level effort to help out the many Texans who will be economically devastated. But nobody can afford a $17,000 power bill for absolutely nothing. So you have the Houston mayor, Sylvester Turner, on Sunday calling on the state of Texas to pay for the enormous electric bills. And you've also some representatives and others saying that there has to be either federal bailout for this or the state simply waiving it, requiring the energy companies to waive it. But this is a lot of Texans who are not going to be able to pay these bills, and God only knows what happens to them after that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even understand why Texas would have to bail out these, like their people. To pay what? I mean, what are we talking about here? Just because there was demand, didn't suddenly electricity didn't just suddenly gain, you know, like earn a golden sheath around it and become incredibly. No, the market dictated that. The BS market that has nothing to do with what it actually provides. Case in point, 6 days without power, $17,000 of an electricity bill, right? Like that is, it's such a perfect example. And it's because Texas's energy supply and system was created to be pegged to market value so that when these things happen, the actual companies aren't responsible for filling in the gaps. The consumers are responsible for it. And the companies are banking on the idea that there's not gonna be a giant snowstorm in Texas. Oops, climate change, right? And there is, or oops, anything, right? So now they just, they siphon off the burden and they put it onto the consumer, and that's what it looks like. So again, it is a failure of free market policies. It's a failure of deregulation. It's a failure of what happens when you allow companies to just skirt regulations and do whatever they want because so they don't have to like prepare for these moments. So again, I'm like, I don't, what kind of money is this? This is not real money. Let's remember that.
Yeah, and it's like in some, I've read a bunch of articles sort of trying to justify why this would be possible. And they say that, well, some people opted into this adaptive pricing model because if they live in an area where the weather tends to be very temperate and energy costs tend to be very predictable, you might save some money. Okay, so I get it. So it's adaptive, but you're saying there was no cap whatsoever designed into it. And I guess why would there be? The companies are writing all of the rules in Texas. But it seems to me like your point about the fact that it's not like coal was objectively more valuable during that time.
Yeah.
It's like if when there's a run on a stock, you know, and why would that ever happen? This is crazy hypothetical. It's more expensive in like a philosophical sense, but it's not because the actual thing that's underlying it is more valuable, really. Yeah. But at least in that case, you're choosing to buy the stock. And as it becomes more expensive, people who choose to buy it make it more expensive than another person chooses to buy it at that price. It's not a thing where you're just like, hey, just give me some stock every 15 minutes for whatever the price is and I can't stop it. These people in Texas weren't like, yes, I would like one $10,000 piece of electricity, please. They just automatically were charged insane prices. How could you possibly expect them to pay that?
Yeah.
Stupid. Everything financial is stupid. And I know I probably sound, I don't know anything about this, so I probably sound really stupid. But I fundamentally believe that the truth is stupid too in this case. I don't think any of
No, you are right. that is stupid. It is a stupid way of doing things, and especially going forward. And this is the thing, is like, that's why they're so, and I urge everyone to read the op-ed that Naomi Klein, the journalist who's written a lot about climate change, has in the New York Times. It's excellent. And it's such a great breakdown of the fact that Republicans are blaming AOC and somehow trying to blame the Green New Deal that doesn't exist, because they know that their policies and their like deregulation free market policies are the reason that we're in this mess. And that actually going forward in a time of climate crisis, in a time that like we are reaping all that those policies have sowed, that they're out of answers. They don't have any more answers, to the point where their elite is just skipping town. You know, and don't get it twisted. Their elite, the elite of this country, will go to Elysium if they can. You know, like Mars rover, like as soon as the Mars, you know, billionaire habitat is ready, they're gonna go there. And like I always say, speed it up, baby, because we got it here. If y'all just go over there, we'll be fine, right? We'll be fine. I don't even need your tax money. Just stop gouging us from this point on.
Yeah, I agree. What a mess. Newsmax, a serious news station, you can tell it's in their name, has a serious concern about the Biden administration, about the White House. Can we trust a group of people that would leave a dog in the shambles? Take a look at this.
Did you see the dog? I want to show you something I noticed. Doesn't he look a little rough? I love dogs. But this dog needs a bath and a comb and all kinds of love and care. I've never seen a dog in the White House like this. I remember Buddy, I remember Millie, I remember lots of dogs, but not a dog who seems, I don't know. I don't know how much love and care he is getting. Let's bring in the historians. I'm having fun with this, obviously, but I do want to talk about some stuff. Millie had like a staff and they really took care of her, very beautiful dog. This dog looks like from the junkyard. And I love that dog, but he looks like he's not been well cared for.
No, not at all. Thank you for having us. No, he looks very dirty and disheveled and very unlike a presidential dog like Millie or Victory or something else in the past in the White House.
Francesca, they brought on two guests, including a presidential historian, to talk about that dog, Champ, 12-year-old German Shepherd, who isn't hot enough for them.
Ew, he's like so not hot, gross. Like, first of all, can I just say I love Champ in that photo, because if you look at the photo, it's just like, hey, like his face is like.
Am I being talked about on Newsmax?
He's so hey, what? It's adorable. He does just have like a really silly face on. He's got a doofy face and I like it. First of all, can you imagine if Joe Biden's dog had a staff around it? The outcry from Republicans about the staff, the dog's staff. First of all, there's a long history of dogs in the White House, the last one being orange and overweight. Once Trump has gotten into the Oval Office, it has become a junkyard. Nothing is sacred. How dare you talk about a 12-year-old rescue dog like that? We love him. Oh, what's his name again?
I am a simp for Champ. We love him. We don't know his name.
We love him.
Yeah.
Look, I don't really care. I just want to know about what the cat's up to. Cause like honestly, my favorite Clinton was Sox.
Yeah.
Sox was the best Clinton, let's be real. You know? Sox was not a neo-lib. Sox was a pure anarchist, black and white kitty. All cats are. They want destruction and mayhem and no borders, baby. We love it. No gods, no masters. And Sox was a tuxedo cat, like my kitty. So I just want to see Biden's cat and then we can talk.
Exactly. Hashtag show us the cat. I said cat.
You did. You did.
I did. Can we put up the photo of Champ? So Champ is a 12-year-old rescue dog. I have I think 11-year-old rescue. I don't know exactly because it's a rescue dog, an old Chihuahua.
Hey.
That's just a dog.
Hey.
Like, that's what a dog looks like. That's a good dog. Don't you just want to sink your hand into what is probably really thick, soft fur? And I bet he's good and he's loyal and he's fun and he's good with kids, because 12-year-old dogs just are. Why are you judging this dog? Are you Dog Rates the cable show now? Mm-hmm. They're good dogs, Newsmax. They're good dogs. Why are you downing on the dog? And then, of course, like, we're really engaging with this, but they just have to find some. Is this the best you can find to criticize Biden for? Like, did he not wear a tan suit? He is a tan dog. This is below the level of the tan suit or the latte salute or something like that. Man, you really need to like come up with something policy based to have a problem with him. I can't. Let me suggest a topic. He's backtracking massively on canceling student loan debt. Attack him for that.
Yeah. No, can I just say though, like, it's 2021. It's the age of the meme. And I wish there was someone in Biden's cabinet that knew that we need to hit back on this, put Champ on the Peloton. Take that photo, Champ on the Peloton, just troll. I mean, if there's one thing you can say about the Trump administration is that they knew how to troll, right? Like, in, you know, by mostly separating children from their parents, but like they relished in it. So I just think we should make fun of like their fake outrage once again. Champ Francesca, definitely does ride the Peloton.
That's funny. They're definitely gonna tweet out a photo of him with like curlers in his hair, yes, or something. It's definitely gonna happen. Oh, man, what a time. I'm a simp for Champ, Kayla Lewis says. I'm a simp for every dog, honestly. I like Champ more than 85% of the humans on the face of the earth, and I've never met him. So anyway, okay, everybody, that's all the Champ news we've got for you. We're gonna ask some tough questions in the next press briefing about Champ's diet, exercise, and more importantly, doggy fashion. We're gonna find out answers to all of these questions.
Hey.
And
Champ.
I wanna throw a ball for Champ. I bet he'd fetch it. Okay. I bet he'd bring it back. And I bet he would wait a second before dropping it because he really likes having the ball. Hello and welcome everyone to our weekly top 10 list that Francesca indeed is here for. It was a last minute audible, but I'm very excited that she wanted to be a part of this. This is gonna be our top 10 Star Wars movies, which is different than most lists. Because with most lists, you have to figure out what should even be on it, let alone what ranking. This is almost entirely just what ranking. And yet, Francesca, are you nervous about the response? Because I know I'm getting attacked.
Yep. The attack of the chat is gonna be the next Star Wars sequel. Yeah, no, exactly. You can't have an opinion about Star Wars without, you know, the nerds or the ultra nerds or the nerds warring against the other nerds getting mad at you. So
yeah,
you're never.
And I'm a nerd,
everybody.
But yeah. No, you can't please everyone. So here's what we're gonna do. We're normally in these top 10 lists, we each do 5. In this case, we wanted to each do 10, but I am going to take inspiration from a podcast that I love, the Beyond the Screenplay podcast. They recently did their top 10 movies of the aughts, and they did it in this format, which I think will make sense. So first, Francesca is going to give us her 10 through 4, and we can talk about any standouts from that. Then I'll do my 10 through 4, and then we'll alternate for the top 3. And only then will we mention the one that didn't even make it on the list, because we want to add a little bit of suspense. But I'm very interested to see what yours will be like. I will say that mine, I know that I've ranked them before, but I couldn't find it. I did find a tweet I'd sent out where I'd given a letter grade to them. Oh. And my ranking no longer is in the order that I letter graded them. So I guess these things naturally change over time.
There's new movies. There's new things.
That's also true. Okay, you want to launch into this? You want to give us your 10 through 4?
Okay, so when do I talk about the films that did not make it at all?
At the very end. Because we wanna know, maybe it's coming, you know?
Well. Okay. So, okay, first of all, obviously disclaimer, I'm not the biggest Star Wars nerd there is. I'm sorry if I get your names wrong, and I'm sorry if I don't know which planet, you know, which species is from, and I'm sorry if all these names of the films sound the exact same. But I did grow up on Star Wars. I do have an older brother. I love Star Wars. I love the original trilogy. And I have loved a lot of what has come out since, and I have also not loved it. So, definitely a fan, not a super fan. Number 10. And this is, I guess this is a little bit okay. So wait, 10 through 6. Okay, 10 through 6.
Or 10 through 4.
Oh, 10 through 4. Okay, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay, number 10, Revenge of the Sith. Last of the first three, the trilogy or the prequels. It's when yeah, okay, we know Revenge of the Sith. Darth Vader gets all disgusting and says think quotes like, in my opinion, the Jedi are the bad ones or something like that.
From my point of view.
Yeah, that's what it was. I did consult my boyfriend Matt Lieb, who did help me, who does actually work on the Star Wars internet show. So he's he knows this a lot better, but he reminded me of that horrible quote from my point of view.
So bad.
But okay. It wasn't the worst of the prequels. 9, Attack of the Clones, because I'm a lady who enjoys some backstory, and I did like some of the love scenes in the couple that had the least amount of chemistry ever. Mm-hmm. Okay, so 9, Attack of the Clones. 8, A New Hope. It's just kind of normal. Ooh. It's the first one, you know, it's the first Star Wars ever. It's like, it's good, but it's normal. Nothing really that amazing happens. 7, skipping down to the sequels, The Force Awakens. Han Solo gets killed. Also, the sequels I can kind of interchange them. I don't
really
love.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. 7, Force Awakens. 6, Rise of Skywalker. 5, Last Jedi.
Well, hold on. So really fast, let's stop at Rise of Skywalker. So you have that in sort of the middle range. So you kind of liked it. You liked it more than some of the newer ones and some of the older ones.
Oh yeah, the Rise of Skywalker is the that's the most recent one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I liked it. I actually really liked it. I think that the like I am the daughter of homeboy is of was Palpatine. Not of Palpatine was not I was not into that at all.
Yeah, me either.
But I did think that Adam Driver's performance, and again, I'm a lady, I like the love stuff, I like the weird sexual tension. Adam Driver's performance, I think, crushed it for me. I think that outshone the stupidness of her being Palpatine's daughter, which was like, just let her be her own thing.
Totally.
Let her be her own thing. Okay, but so then Force Awakens, Rise of Skywalker, Last Jedi number 5, which was really good. Luke dies in that. And then Return of the Jedi number 4, which was obviously the last of the original. Yes,
yeah.
The Return of the Jedi, that'd be 4.
Okay.
So that takes us up to the final 3, but yeah.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a few. So you don't like, it's not like you only like the old ones or you only like the new ones, it's really a mix. That's interesting.
No, okay. I think obviously like the ones that didn't make it, I'm sorry, but spoiler, Phantom Menace doesn't make it because I don't care about the trade war. And I don't care about your weird Chinese accent and you're like horrible scripting, no personality, Qui-Gon's boring as hell. Ewan McGregor, I've never hated him more. I'm sorry.
Aww.
Like just so boring, no personality. If I could, okay. I think that the first 3 shouldn't be on this list at all. So yeah.
Okay.
I also have a thought about it.
Well, I'm gonna get my 10 through 4 and we'll talk. My 10 is Rise of Skywalker. I liked Adam Driver was okay. Some of the actiony stuff was okay, but some I don't know, just it didn't really care about Rose. It didn't care about, it's just so many characters just didn't seem, they didn't seem interested in. And like at the end when all the ships come, it was clearly trying to do the Marvel portal scene thing, but it didn't really feel earned. Anyway, so that was my number 10. Nine was really? Solo. I've only seen it once, but it was perfectly fine. Eight was Revenge of the Sith, which I used to like because the last lightsaber fight is pretty good, but I've watched it multiple times and that is really like the only good part of it actually. So you can't get higher than that with one good scene. Seven is The Phantom Menace. It does have horrible like personifications of Asian characters, Jewish characters, black characters, really bad. But it also had Darth Maul and it had the single best lightsaber fight scene of any of these, and so I did like that.
Are you saying you like Jar Jar? That's basically just an admission that you think Jar Jar was perfect.
Okay.
Okay, no. Jar Jar was an abomination on the franchise, okay? Horrible, horrible.
Jar Jar isn't as bad as the head Gungan, that's worse. that was bad.
No, I like the head Gungan, he had that thing.
Okay, he was like, what were they trying to say? Did he have a medical problem?
Look, William Barr, it was the only parts that William Barr could get.
Oh my God, does look like him. Anyway, that's number seven, we're still high up. Okay, number six was Rogue One. I think it's a very solid movie, cool characters, and not cool characters because you've seen them in six movies, just cool new characters. I thought it was pretty awesome. As I see, I've only seen it once. As I see it more, it might even move up, but that's my number six. Number five is A New Hope, perfectly serviceable. It's a pretty bare bones movie. It's like, it's just the hero's journey, but it's cool and started the whole thing.
Yeah.
And my number four is The Empire Strikes Back, which it is very good. But in comparison to some of the other Star Wars movies, it does not have, the climax isn't as awesome in terms of the action. It's very great for the characters and the revelations and mystery and all that stuff. And it's a solid movie with a lot of cool things in it, but not my favorite. So that's up to my number four. What is your number three? These are the ones we really like. All the rest are garbage, they're trash. Yeah. We like these three.
Yeah. Well, my number four was Return of the Jedi, and that is, it's the final, and it is, it has Ewoks and, you know, yub nub or whatever it is, and I love it. yub nub, no disrespect. Mm-hmm. But my top three are Mandalorian, season two, maybe the episode with Ahsoka and when we find out that Grogu's name is Grogu, but the Mandalorian series is excellent. It's so good. The pacing is amazing. The characters are great. You know, even their problematic MMA fighter does an okay job. And
he's okay.
And it's baby effing Yoda, you guys. I love it. I love it. I want it. I want to like inject it into my veins. I love the Mandalorian. Number two, Rogue One is the perfect movie. Rogue One is an excellent movie. I love Rogue One. I love it because the characters are just there for this one film. And Jin, right? Jin is such a great character. And of course, my boy Diego Luna is amazing. And it's what started everything even before A New Hope. It is the blueprint to the Death Star that we didn't even know we owed the entire franchise to this one moment. And so many people died in it. In fact, everybody dies in it, but they did it. They sacrificed themselves. This is the Jesus on the cross of the entire series.
Can I add
good.
To that?
It's really good.
Because maybe Rogue One should be higher for me. So yeah, you're right. All those characters are great. K2SO, the droid is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And also you have, I don't remember their names, but you have the guy with the machine gun and the guy who's like kind of a Jedi.
So good.
Oh my God. So good. So good.
And multiple times during that film, you know, it definitely is like, then we got to do this errand and that errand and that errand. But I think that movie definitely was like,
oh, they're gonna not make this. Like, and it dawns on you that, that they're not gonna make it, and either they're gonna fail completely or they're gonna fail and that's the point. It's just, it's so good.
It's so good. I'm gonna watch that again.
Yeah. And number one is the backstory. It is the drama. It is the thing that propels this entire franchise. It is Empire Strikes Back. And yes, I'm being basic because many people say that, but also I'm a basic bitch. I'm a basic person. I wanna be entertained. I liked the new Star Wars films. They're all in the middle there for me. They're strong films. They're entertaining as hell. So yeah. Empire Strikes Back is definitely the film.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I will say, and this is a bit of a spoiler for my top three, I didn't consider Mandalorian for this because it's not a movie. If I was considering it, it would be very high up. I really like The Mandalorian, both seasons. But I'm just doing the movies. But that said, and Empire Strikes Back was great. I love it. I probably liked the new movies more than your average person. So my number three is Force Awakens. I love it. And it might even be one higher if I'm not counting nostalgia. But because this one's newer, you don't have as much nostalgia for it. I just love it. I love all of the new characters. I love the new sense of humor that they put into Star Wars movies that had always been lacking. There are a couple of moments, like Star Wars always has those moments of, this needs to be done. Are you gonna sacrifice yourself to get it done? Are you gonna sacrifice yourself to save your friend? That's the stuff in movies that gets me more than anything else. And this movie has a bunch of it.
Yes.
And there's a moment when, like at the very end, when everything's like really dark, they're in their lightsaber fight in the snowy forest, and Kyle goes to grab the lightsaber and it goes to her instead. And I tear up every single time I see that. I'm about to tear up right now thinking about it, actually.
I love that about Star Wars though. Like, that's the moments that give you chills are like, that's how you know it did its job as a Star Wars film. And you're totally right about that. Oh, that snowy fight scene is so good.
I love it. And I love, the new style of lightsaber fighting that's much more like, no, these are actual swords with weight. I like it. So that's number three. Number two is Return of the Jedi. It's my favorite of the originals.
Yeah.
Just because, like, growing up, I liked the Ewoks. I thought that was cool. I liked the motorcycles through the forest. I liked the assault on the Death Star at the end. I thought trying to win his father back over, like, little in the beginning sequence with the Sarlacc and all that is really cool. It's just such a solid movie with so much good stuff in it. I know that Empire is like technically a better film and it's got better surprises. I love Return of the Jedi. That's my favorite of those. And so my number one, and this is one of the most controversial pop culture positions I have, is Force Awakens really could be number two if not for the nostalgia. My number one is Last Jedi.
Yeah.
I love Last Jedi. I think it's like almost the perfect Star Wars film. It's got great the fight near the end with Kylo and her fighting those like red armored guards or whatever is so good. The entire sequence on the like salt planet at the end is so beautiful.
Yes.
The beginning scene with the bombing run, obviously it's ridiculous, physics don't make any sense, but forgetting that, that little mini scene where the woman on the bomber is just trying to accomplish her task, I tear up during that every time. That could have just been a short film and I would have loved it. It's just got so much. I like the stuff between Kylo and her. There's some parts that aren't amazing, but I love that film. It's just so cool. It's so beautiful and cinematic.
I think the new Star Wars films, I'm sorry, they really found their groove. They really found what was good and beautiful. And it was the pacing was much more like the original Star Wars. And they used CG in a way that was not like ham-fisted and ugly and bad. And the characters have always been the thing that drove Star Wars. It wasn't just the, you know, the universe that was created as the, you know, the prequels created. But yeah, oh my God, when I saw the Spanish ladies on that island that Luke is training on, the little Spanish like frog women in The Last Jedi. It's so good. They're so funny. And
I like the little birds.
Oh my God. What are they? God damn it.
The porgs?
The porgs? How can you not like the porgs, the foxes, the Spanish ladies, any sequence of training, right? You got the, you know, training young Rey. I love it. It was a great film.
Yeah. It was. And like the Luke versus Kylo at the end, when Kylo is trying to like have all those things shoot at him and he just wants him dead. And that like the three different perspectives on what actually happened during his training. Like, and I liked the fact that she was just a nobody again, as you were saying. They took that back in The Rise of Skywalker, which they really shouldn't have. But I just love it. Come at me, internet. It's good, okay? It's good. Anyway, what
I think you might be right on that. What?
Phantom Menace didn't make it on your list, but one other must have, because you had The Mandalorian.
Solo was such a sad specimen.
Yes, that
of
is
a film.
True.
Like it was an action film, cool. It could have been so much better, but it was just another action film, and I'm like, all right, I fell asleep. But that's again, like, I'm the kind of person that like I do like fight scenes. But I also need some like drama and stakes and interesting pacing and interesting backstory. And Solo had like
Amelia Clark wasn't doing it for you.
I love Amelia Clark, but she was her character was bad. And then like Woody Harrelson appears, and you're like, what is this?
I liked Woody Harrelson. I thought he was pretty good. I didn't really love the Solo guy, but I liked the train heist. I thought the train heist was cool.
The whole no. The whole thing
okay.
Solo deserves a better movie than that.
Okay. Yeah, it was the worst of the new movies, I think. And like compared to Rogue One, it was no. But yeah, and for me, Attack of the Clones didn't make it. I think I've watched Attack of the Clones all the way through just once. And the stuff at the end was kind of cool. And I remember in the theaters flipping out when Yoda started flipping out. But like it was all this stuff about trying to figure out who was making the clones. And I didn't care. Like, why are you, this isn't Sherlock Holmes. What are you doing, Ewan McGregor? I don't know. I didn't love that.
Oh my God. I tried to watch Phantom Menace. Speaking of the one I didn't like, I tried to watch it recently on May the 4th. Just like, whatever, let's do this. Let's see. And like when I was 16, it came out 15, 16. And like even me, high as a 16-year-old watching it and being thoroughly disappointed, but happy that it was a Star Wars film in the theater that I got to see. Like then, you know, however many years later, I'm like, nope, I was right. It sucks. I couldn't watch it all the way through.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, look, when Darth Maul puts his hand up and one lightsaber comes out, and then another comes out.
Sure.
I forget a lot of other stuff about the movie at that point. As a young boy, it was just, you can do that?
That's what Matt Lieb said. That's what he said. He was just like, okay, but the fight scene, the fight scene at the end, the double saber action, they're red.
Good. That was good.
Been red before.
Anyway, okay. Well, that's our top 10 list. Thank you all for joining us. I'm sure you just enjoyed that and don't have anything to say to us, but feel free to post below. I'm sure it's just no comments. It's, oh, thank you. That was a good list. But anyway, let us know what your ranking is, what the biggest differences between yours and ours are. You can do that in the comments. And thank you as always for being members and making this possible. Thank you, Francesca.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time. We're very lucky to be joined on the show today by a guest who recently went viral after talking about the recent spate of violence against members of the Asian American Pacific Islander community. Amanda Nguyen, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So this is a topic that has obviously demanded attention, but hasn't received much of it, this recent xenophobic wave of violence. Can you tell us a little bit about this for people who might not have been following it?
Yeah, absolutely. Ever since COVID has happened, and certain elected leaders like President Trump have used racist rhetoric in order to scapegoat a group of people, including Asian Americans, we have seen the consequences of that leadership, of that rhetoric. That has been a spike in hate crimes against the Asian American community. So for instance, in New York, we've seen over a 1,000% spike of hate crimes, and that recently has resulted in lives being lost. A couple of weeks ago, Bitcha, who is, I think, in his 80s, was brutally pushed to the ground and later died because of those injuries. We also have seen a Filipino man in Manhattan had his face slashed open. I mean, these pleas that he had saying that he thought nobody would help him, that he thought he was going to die, are heartbreaking. And these are just two gruesome examples of so many. Last March, there was a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old who were stabbed in a grocery store in Texas. The man who stabbed them thought they were Chinese, they were Burmese, and he on the record said that he stabbed them because he said he thought he was preventing the spread of COVID. So this is something that has been happening to our community. Literally, it's being caught on camera, but it's also way more than just what is being caught on camera.
Well, okay, so there's a lot that I really want us to talk about, but just for again, just to clarify, this is not a thing where we think, hey, maybe it's linked to the pandemic, but this is very on the record. People are clear about their motivations for the violence and also things, you know, falling short of violence, harassment and things like that as well, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and it does seem like recently, including in the examples that you gave, that it seems like older individuals might be being targeted in particular. Is that the case or is that just anecdotal?
I think the highly visible cases are of elderly abuse. So for instance, there was a woman in her 90s who literally was lit on fire. Again, Bitcha being in his 80s, murdered. You know, there was a 91-year-old who was also pushed to the ground. So because they were, one, caught on camera, and two, they have been visible in stories, that's why there's this trend. And I'm not saying that there isn't a trend of attacking elderly people, but what I am saying is that like the 2-year-old and the 6-year-old who were stabbed, right? This is not something that is exclusive to old people. In fact, there's so many reports in those thousands that have come in that have said of all different types of age ranges that they feel like they're under attack.
Now, I obviously, there's a number of high profile cases that have happened recently. I remember, you know, in the initial months of the pandemic, when you had, at least there was a bit of a national conversation about which of the racist terms Trump and members of the right-wing media were used, were they acceptable, were they not, all of that. And there was harassment attacks then. Was there a period where it got any better, or was that just the media, including possibly myself, losing track of the story?
It's certainly the latter. You know, as the community, as a member of that community, I have never in the period of COVID felt a relief from the fear, from the fog of terror that happens when I walk outside the door, right? These people who have been attacked at all different age groups and have been attacked doing daily activities like walking on the street, going to the grocery store, just standing on their sidewalk. So the fear is absolutely real. It, to a level of extent, this is terror domestically. And I want to call on everyone who may be a bystander or just even as a member of your community to stand up and say something, to denounce these hate crimes.
So President Trump is gone, so we don't have to, you know, worry about some of the things he might say during a press conference. And we've got President Joe Biden instead, who seems less likely to use some of these terms. But is he really helping? Is there something he could be doing to help fight back against this more than a year long campaign of harassment and violence?
There is no doubt that the highest office in the land has incredible power to prioritize what the nation's attention span is. And while I'm so grateful that President Biden and the White House have issued the executive memorandum calling and denouncing these hate crimes, there's still so much more that can be done, right? So I want to see exactly what the DOJ is going to do, what Merrick Garland is going to do as Attorney General. Right? I want to see not only in this justice framework, but also in the Department of Education. Why isn't AAPI history taught So many people don't know that American history includes the internment of Japanese Americans. So many people don't know that the greatest, one of the largest lynchings in US history was against Asian Americans. People don't know that the KKK targeted Vietnamese Americans in New Orleans. This is part of history that has been completely erased. And when you erase people, you erase our humanity. Silence is violence.
And yeah, I wonder if maybe this is linked to what you were just talking about, but generally, if there is like random acts of violence, you know, that the media usually is pretty interested in that. They like talking about, especially local media, they like talking about acts of violence and things like that. And yet, as you talked about earlier, this series of attacks isn't something that the media is treating particularly seriously. Is it just, you know, sort of racist lack of attention? What do you think is the cause for the lack of national conversation about what's been going on?
Yeah, I'm calling out not only the media, but everyone who's in a decision-making position. You know, when we get to elections here, Asians were the margin of victory in Georgia, right? And even in polling, even in progressive spaces, the AAPI community is left off of polling. We are always an afterthought. I can't tell you the amount of times that I've been in progressive spaces which espouse virtues of diversity, and I look around and I'm the only AAPI member there. Right? So this has got to change, where people think that, oh, you know, we can just erase them. They don't really matter. They're not a voting power block, which is certainly wrong. We are one of the, if not the fastest growing minority group within the United States. But even beyond that, I'm really done justifying why it is that we deserve to be included within your diversity roster. We deserve to be included because we exist. We've contributed to this country. There's a significant history of us being a part of this country. We are Americans, so start acting like we are.
Now, we've talked about the media. We've talked about like people like Joe Biden, other politicians. For regular people who are watching this, what, if anything, can they do to try to fight back against what we've been seeing?
I think it's so, so important to start the conversation for there to be empathy. I think empathy is the key here. You know, if you've ever eaten Asian food, if you've ever watched any of our things, if you ever listened to our music or K-pop or anything like that, just know that there are also so many people, a huge community behind that, that while contributing to your life, also is calling out for help right now. So tweeting something, posting something, all that actually has dramatic effect. You know, that video that I posted a couple weeks ago went viral because people cared. And I want to thank everyone who has tagged folks, who have said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to stay silent on this, because it really created a new reality. It created a space that said, hey, I am here to listen and validate and see your pain. And therefore, that's why we've seen thousands of AAPIs speak up for the first time, because they feel like, oh, maybe my grief will be actually seen. The opposite of love isn't hate, it's apathy. And silence erases our humanity. And so what people can do is speak up.
Awesome, awesome. Amanda Nguyen, founder and CEO of Rise. Really appreciate you taking time out to join our show today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.